It's a feature of the 21st century food supply, the distance from the place where food is produced to the place where the handsomely wrapped, prepared, processed something or other is bought before ending up on someone's plate, that is, if the plate isn't actually part of the packaging. Yes, the distance from farm to plate has probably never been greater in human history. And with modern refrigeration techniques, fish, chicken, beef, all kinds of meat and protein can be ground up, shaped like clay or even plastic into adorable little shapes, little fishes, little nuggets, all kinds of yummy, scary, mysterious meats. Chicken, horse, beef, lamb, there's a whole barnyard in there. Exactly what is a complete mystery.
This isn't pot roast. It's mystery meat.
The mystery meat, what kind is anyone's guess, is salted, dried, and then preserved in its own fat.
I made a meatloaf.
Hey. Wow, would you look at that? I thought we were out of meat.
Oh, no. We add meat.
In the case of the horse meat scandal in Europe that is raging, I'm sure you've heard about it, consumers may have been caught in the disguise of processed food, where in Europe, horse in Romania ended up in France, and then through a chain of other suppliers and processors ended up on grocery shelves as lasagna and other prepared goodies. The global chain IKEA found horse meat in its famous Swedish meatballs. Now, U.S. IKEA stores were anxious to insist this week that they are not a part of this. Their Swedish meatballs, according to a statement, are all from American meat sources. I love that. Our Swedish meatballs are not Swedish. But this kind of thing is a consequence of the global food industry and, in some sense, the lowly meatloaf, that original mystery meat. But not the first time humans have ground up meat to disguise exactly what they might be eating. Professor Paul Friedman is a medieval historian at Yale University who's written about food and the history of the Middle Ages. He's also the editor of the book, Food, the History of Taste. Professor, welcome.
Hi, John.
So when humans originally ground up meat and sort of disguised it, we're talking really sausage, but that's a preserved meat. With modern refrigeration techniques, ground beef, unpreserved, can look like just about anything.
That's right. And in fact, in the Middle Ages, they liked ground meat and added things to it for flavor, not just to extend the meat.
And as we move from the sort of medieval period to the processed food period, it's really no surprise that there are lots of different ingredients in ground cuisines of all kind. I mean, the average meatloaf recipe has tons of bread in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Bread, or Julia Child had a wonderful recipe for fried onions and cheddar cheese in meatloaf. And these are things that help the flavor because, in fact, if you made meatballs or meatloaf with just pure ground beef, you'd find it kind of flavorless. And, sort of what's the point of it? It wouldn't have a different kind of more complicated taste than just a pot roast or just a roast beef.
Is there a tradition in ground meats and ground cuisine of actually using as much of the animal or maybe some other animals that happen to be lying around in the meat to extend the supply?
Certainly, although it depends on what class we're talking about. So in recipes from the Islamic world, elite people like the caliphs or noblemen would have ground meat dishes of all sorts of complicated ingredients and spices, and without adulteration of cheaper ingredients. For the ordinary people, yes, it's more common that you take a bunch of different things that you have left over or some animal parts that you might not want to eat in their natural or plain state.
And, of course, Sweeney Todd, the musical, is all about, humans ending up in the stew and the sausage there.
Or Sinclair Lewis's The Jungle, which 110 years ago kind of established the demand for federal meat inspection.
You know, when you hear this outrage in Europe about horse meat ending up in processed food, in some sense, who's crying foul, who's screaming about this, who's not, who's horrified? It's really an echo of some of these ancient kind of class designators of who eats what food, yes?
That's right. That's right. And that's kind of what attracted me to food in the first place. Why is it that rich people in one period eat spicy food and poor people do not? And then 100 years later, it's the poor who eat spicy food and the rich who don't. I think horse meat's a little different because horse meat is a little bit repellent, but it's not as bad as, say, finding guinea pig or white rat or something that's really, really bad.
Yeah, I guess rat. There's a consensus on rat.
I think there's some wide agreement, exactly. Or dog, which in the Western world is not considered to be edible.
And do you think that the processed food industry enhances the temptation to combine bizarre ingredients to produce delectable lasagnas where you really can't detect what's in there without a DNA test? And if it's cooked, it's hard even to do that.
I think the processed food industry is a victim of its own globalization. I don't think that it's worth their while, the big companies, to have these kinds of scandals. But they don't have control over their suppliers. They don't really know what they're getting. And so this happens again and again, where the companies that are selling meat, like IKEA, have so many suppliers, so many places that the food is coming from, that they're helpless.
Dr. Paul Friedman is a medieval historian at Yale University who's written about food. He's the editor of the book Food, The History of Taste. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John, for having me.
So we've managed to turn off one listener from Plantation, Florida.
This is David from Plantation, Florida. I would not eat dog meat, wouldn't eat horse meat. Kind of repulsive and sounds really disgusting. That's why I keep kosher. I don't even want to think about something like that.
Well, Rachel in Portland thought about it. Being a vegetarian, no, I would not eat horse. Being a horse owner, double no. Do you know what chemicals we put in our horses between dewormers and painkillers? Seriously, it's nothing you want to ingest, okay? All right, uncle, I'm not having any horse.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.